And they found that the prime importance was caring for the source so that everything else downstream would be taken care of.
But it doesn't serve them for us to take on the emotion that they're feeling. Like if they're depressed and we get depressed with them, then I'm not serving them in the way that God has called me to serve them.
Drainers are people that take away from you, and gainers are people that pour back into you.
The key to helping people through some really difficult situations with not taking on their emotions is acknowledging your own limitations.
Am I enabling, casting my pearls before the swine, or am I helping to teach and bring someone out of that situation that they're in?
Welcome to the Dear Young Married Couple podcast. In this episode, we're going to discuss how not to carry other people's baggage.
And we are honored to have two guests with us here today, although they're not fully guests. We'll explain that in a moment. But our guests are Evan and Ashley Grizzle. Welcome, guys, to the podcast.
Welcome.
Thanks for having us. We're excited.
Aww.
Yes.
So Evan and Ashley are the hosts of a podcast called Think on These Things, part of the Biblos Network. And they are a pastor of a church in Wilmington, North Carolina. And the reason why I said they are actually not quite guests is because they are on our team. We're so privileged to have Evan and Ashley on our team.
Tell you what, it's a dynamite team. Yes. I think just because we found people that are... They can easily be friends. They are friends.
Exactly.
We just need to move them a little closer.
I know, right? They're on the opposite coast.
Yeah. I mean, they have a Tesla, so they need to live in California.
Yes.
Not many superchargers in North Carolina.
My husband's transitioning to vegan. Like, you would fit right in.
Oh my goodness.
So much pressure.
Well, we are honored to have them on the team, even if they are on the wrong coast. But Evan is our executive vision ninja, and Ashley is our creator of opportunities. And yes, those are their official titles, folks. And
well, since we're the ones who create official,
yes,
we could do whatever we want, right?
Thank you. That's right. I've always wanted to be a ninja.
But they're incredible, and we are so thankful to have them on our team. And we knew as soon as we had them join our team that we needed to get an interview set up with them shortly thereafter.
We looked at their resumes and we said, okay, these people look really cool. Let's talk.
Yes.
So we got some people, these people on our team, and we're charging forward.
Yes. So we are so excited to have you guys. A little bit more about them. They are a pastor in North Carolina, and Ashley is also a counselor, has a master's in marriage and family therapy. Evan has a master's in executive leadership, and it shows, man, in their education is... comes through, but not only that, their anointing comes through and their giftedness comes through. So thanks so much, guys, for joining us to talk about this important subject.
Yeah.
Thank you guys for having us. We're excited to be here.
Aw. Well, they're great bosses, you guys. Yeah. I just want to say this on the podcast. They're just amazing.
They are the best people I have ever ninja'd for.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes. We'll say that.
Yes. You know. We know you had it in you. Like when we first saw your split toe socks, we were like,
yes,
he's an ninja. Yeah.
That's my Tesla driving socks.
So. You guys. Okay. As you can see, our meetings with Evan and Ashley are halfway productive and halfway a laughing fest.
Yeah, I think half and half's being very generous. Right?
Well, you know, you got to enjoy the people you work with.
And, right.
And I think very that's true. What's happening. And yes. When you have chemistry, you can do some cool stuff. Mm-hmm. So we were curious. We threw some ideas out to talk about, and we chose this one because I think you guys are going to speak very well to it, because not only are you counselors and see people, and Evan, you are a leadership coach, but you guys are also pastors, which means you're counselors and a leadership coach in a different way.
Yeah.
And so tell us a little bit about what does it mean to have emotional boundaries? How do you maybe tell us too how it, maybe you struggle with it, or, you know, before, and then you learned, okay, maybe we need to have boundaries around our lives in this area.
Yeah. What are we talking about when we say an emotional boundary?
Yeah. So that's great. Because I think having an emotional boundary looks like having a healthy sense of self, mm-hmm. who you are. And in the moment, it looks like knowing where you're at and what you're feeling. And the reason why this is so important is so that you're not taking on the emotions of other people. Mm-hmm. And we have struggled with this, and we hear this come up a lot as a common theme, that often in situations, in leadership situation, in marriages, in families, people will come into a situation and there'll be maybe tension, or there'll be anger, or there'll be something else going on. And then that individual finds themselves taking that on mm-hmm. when they didn't actually feel that way in the first place. And commonly we hear, I don't know how to not do that. I don't mm-hmm. know how to not take that on as my yeah. own feelings.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. And I think people experience that in ministry. But even folks maybe who are not in a position of leadership or in ministry, they might even experience that in their own marriage or family, maybe or taking on family members, in-laws.
Something I regularly see while counseling people, though, is on their job, depending on what their job is.
Yeah. Place, yes.
So if they're caretaking and they see people die, or they're seeing, well, counselors, this mm-hmm. is typical. It's very difficult sometimes to lay aside someone's heartache.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then enter your happy life.
You know? Right.
So yeah. I see that constantly.
How would you say, Evan, as a pastor, and then maybe I'll have you speak to this as well, Ashley, as a counselor, even though I know you both pastor and counsel together. but Evan, how would you say we draw the line between taking on someone's burden spiritually in order to serve them and lead them and guide them versus not having an emotional boundary in place and taking on their, their emotions in the fullest sense?
Yeah, that's a really good question. You know, there was a preacher I heard speaking about it one time, and I thought it was so good, and it's so true. I'm new to this pastoring thing, so there's a lot of feelings and sensations that I get that I might not know exactly why I'm feeling them or sensing them.
Okay.
And there would be times where, as a pastor, you'll come in and everything feels heavy, like you're coming into a service, or maybe there's a heaviness like in a certain event or something like that. And at first I thought everybody was just having an off day, but then what you find out is that actually you're kind of spiritually carrying the heaviness of the people. Mm-hmm. Because when the Bible talks about Jesus being moved upon with compassion, whenever we understand that to the fullest, I believe that what it was saying was that he felt what they felt, mm-hmm. and that he felt that brokenness, he felt that hurt. And so I think as a pastor, as a leader, we are called to feel that, because we have to be able to connect with them on an empathetic level.
Right.
But there is a line that has to be drawn there, because then there is taking on emotional baggage or emotional issues that maybe are not necessarily spiritual. And mm-hmm. then when that's the case, you're literally riding the wave of people's mm-hmm. emotions. And so I think it takes, as a pastor, from a strictly pastoral standpoint or a leader, I think it takes some prayer to flesh that out, because mm-hmm. you have to be able to figure out what is someone maybe using emotions, maybe they're using emotions to manipulate you or something like that. And then what is that true thing that God is trying to allow you to have empathy for someone?
Yeah.
And they are different. And so it's really important that you figure that out.
Yeah. How would you define empathy?
This is a question for me.
Either of you. Yeah.
Let's go to my wife on that one. Honey, how would you describe empathy?
Yeah. So I would think it would be just relating to and understanding the feelings of others.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Yeah.
You know, I think just to tag on to what Evan said real quick, if that's okay.
Yeah.
I think that when you're dealing, like I know as a pastor's wife, when people are dealing with specific issues and maybe even crises situations, the desire to take that on for them is so strong. It is so strong.
Yeah.
Because when people are truly hurting, and it's people that you're close to and people that you love very deeply,
mm-hmm.
you want to be there for them in a mm-hmm. really, in a real way.
Mm-hmm.
But it can also be a trap, because then sometimes we feel responsible for saving them.
Mm-hmm.
And we cannot save people. Only mm-hmm. Christ can save people. We can walk with them through it, but it doesn't serve them for us to take on the emotion that they're feeling. Like if they're depressed and we get depressed with them,
mm-hmm.
I'm not serving them in the way that God has called me to serve them.
Right.
If they're depressed and I come alongside them and I walk with them in godly counsel and mm-hmm. walk beside them and help hold their hand and point them to the one who can help lead them out of what they're struggling with and help get them through that, mm-hmm. then I really am serving them. Climbing yeah. into it with them is not truly serving, mm-hmm. serving them.
Yeah, that's good. Mm-hmm. Yeah. What are some practical ways as a counselor, Ashley, that you have found to draw that line, to be there and walk with them alongside them, but not get in the hole with them, and to serve them well? What are some practical things you've put in place?
Yeah. So, I think just setting up healthy boundaries, like with my time, mm-hmm. I have found when I'm not getting enough rest and mm-hmm. I'm not getting downtime, then the pull is there for me to jump in and cross mm-hmm. those emotional boundaries and maybe do things that I normally wouldn't do, but because I'm tired and I'm yeah. not, you know, I'm feeling vulnerable, then mm-hmm. the pull is there for me yeah. to. So it's healthy, like time boundaries, healthy downtime. Mm-hmm. I was just talking with someone recently about, you know, having friends and having time with Evan and spending time with my family. Mm-hmm. Those are things that fill me emotionally. So then I'm not vulnerable emotionally to other people pulling my emotions across those boundaries that I have set up.
Yeah.
Good.
That's good. So a lot of self-care, being ready emotionally to pour into others and not just take on their emotions by having your bucket full.
Mm. Yeah.
So what do you do in a circumstance where, say there's been a tragedy in a family in your churches, mm-hmm. in their life, right?
Yeah.
And you're now struck by the heaviness of it.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. And now you're walking with them and tempted not to put it on your back. How do you maintain your own equilibrium for your own family?
Mm-hmm.
Without letting it, you know, like really drag you down.
Mm-hmm.
That's a really great question, because when tragedy strikes, I know for us and I know for other pastors that I know, it's, hey, what can I do for you? What do you need? You mm-hmm. call me if you need me. My phone is under my pillow and I'm here for you, because the situation is so bad. They need you. But then it also looks like, okay, this is going on. You're going out to dinner as a family. Okay, let's not talk about this.
Mm-hmm.
Let's put our phones down, you know, for an hour. Let's, mm-hmm. You know, let's just try to steer the conversation to family time and, mm-hmm. you know, things that maybe aren't centered around this particular event. And mm-hmm. then, you know, you'll pick it back up. But for right now, let's yeah. just take a few minutes to ourselves and let's, you know, mm-hmm. spend some time together so that we all feel replenished when mm-hmm. we need to make contact with them again.
Can and I serve them story? Well.
Yes.
Please.
I think there's a story in a book that we read, and I can't remember if it was Soul Keeping or another one, Ordering Your Private World, but it both are very, very good books. And one of the stories in the books was that there was a stream that fed life into a community in a mountainside. And what this community did was they paid someone to go to the source of the stream and keep the stream free of anything, like they kept it free of all pollutants, so that everything flowing from the source, when it reached the people, it would continue to give health and vitality. Mm-hmm. Well, as everything had gotten bigger in the city, they needed more money to handle infrastructure and things like that, and they stopped paying the person who cared for the source. Mm-hmm. And then the stream got real dirty, the stream rock got real muddy, and everybody started getting sick, and nobody wanted to come to the town anymore. Mm-hmm. And they found that the prime importance was caring for the source so that everything else downstream would be taken care of. And in those moments, you have to care for the source, which, mm-hmm, if you're the one giving, then it has to be you that you're caring for in those moments, whether it be prayer, Bible reading, spending time with your family, spending time with friends, a hobby that fills you. You know, there's a thought that talks about drainers and gainers. Drainers are people that take away from you, and gainers are people that pour back into you. Mm-hmm. And so aligning yourself with those people during those times so that you're full, kind of like you were saying, because you always want to be able to be there when you need to be there without being drugged into it. Mm. So have a full bucket, but also make sure that you build a little fence around that bucket and spend time with your family.
Well, and I think sometimes people think that self-care has to be like this rigid time, you know, every week, you know, on Wednesdays at, you know, lunchtime, I'm going to do this self-care thing. Mm-hmm. Well, sometimes self-care has to be really kind of fluid. I know for us, our schedule can really change. Yeah. And so it's like, okay, right now we have this crisis situation going on. We have this going on. We have a lot of stuff going on. But when we, you know, next week, you know, we're we've got a babysitter for date night. We've got, you know, this, we're going to go out of town here and we're going to take that time. And we
do
just
a reading retreat.
Our reading retreat. Yes. We're going to make sure that we fit those times in. Yep. And so it's not always this rigid, like, no one's crossing my time at, you know, every Wednesday.
Yes.
Cause that's setting yourself up. Mm-hmm. But when you like, okay, I'm going to build this time in as soon as it's available, we're going to make this, you know, happen.
That's good. Mm-hmm. I like that. Self-care can be fluid and not so rigid the way that the postmodern, I think, narrative is around self-care. Like, it's, you know, you have to have this rigidity and this schedule and pour into you. And yes, but it doesn't need to be rigid. It can be flexible and fluid based on the circumstances and the needs of your ministry, career, family, et cetera.
Absolutely.
Especially speaking as someone that is OCD, the fluidity is extremely important because I get so upset whenever like my schedule gets thrown off, and like today was the day from you know where, and like we're just like all over the place doing all kinds of crazy things, and you look up and it's 12:30 and you're like, what happened? You know, I had to, I wanted to do all these things. So you just need to go along with the fluidity of life. And because that when you're so rigid, it can create a lot of internal anxiety that doesn't need to be there.
That's good.
So kind of like jumping off that, because I feel like with that emotional boundary, it's not just the physical boundaries that we've kind of been talking about it, but it's also a mental boundary. I've seen people that are present, or I should say with their family, but not present in their mind.
Yeah.
And they're taking care of church problems, or they're taking care of their mother, or they're taking in their mind, they're somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
How would you help someone that's just not able to slow their brain down, or maybe they're trying, but maybe not using any techniques. How would you coach them?
Go ahead. Dude, it's so funny because you just described me for like the last year. My wife is so awesome and so sweet, and she coaches me through things because she's got the training and the love and the patience for it. And I'm over here like, can't shut off, you know, can't turn my brain off. It's 9 o'clock and I'm
thrashing around.
Yeah. I'm like, honey, what do you think about such and such? She's like, I'm not working right now. I'm like, okay.
Boundary.
Could you start, please?
I just clocked you in, actually. You are working right now. But I think the thing about it is you have to be very intentional with those times, whether it's putting your phone on do not disturb, your phone and your Apple Watch outside of the room. Like one of the things that I've had to do, because we've had so many dinners that get messed up because I can't wait because of my whatever the word is, I'll leave my phone in the car because there has to be a time where you can, what if it's whatever the case is, just let your mind shut off from the things that are strenuous.
Yeah.
And just be focused on something that's going to refill you. And mm-hmm. there's times where me and her are together, and you talked about the presence aspect, and that's so important. Cause I notice a lot, like I would be there in body, but like my mind would be somewhere else, or I would be so tired mm-hmm. that my family's not really enjoying the downtime. Mm. And so it's really important that we make an effort to be ready for those moments mm-hmm. and just shut everything out.
Yeah.
I advised someone the other day because they were telling me that they have the hardest time, you know, not pulling out their phone because they feel like, you know, their boss is going to text them and they're going to miss something. And I was like, well, start practicing, you know, start with, you know, go for 15, you know, 30 minutes and practice not pulling out your phone. Mm-hmm. You know, and then after 30 minutes, get like a regular watch that's not going to mm-hmm. give you messages. And yep. then after 30 minutes, just check your phone and make sure everything's fine. And then put it back or text your boss in advance and say, hey, I'm not going to be available for the next hour, but mm-hmm. I'll be sure to check in after that and yep. set up that boundary.
Mm-hmm. So good.
Relieve your mind.
Mm-hmm. So good.
Yeah.
For a lot of people, I've advised them to write down the things that are on their mind mm-hmm. and come back yeah. to it.
That's good.
Yep.
Just because, like, you know how people, you look at their browser windows and they have all of them up at the same time. They have like 30 yeah. and you're like, please, that's driving me nuts. Just like, yeah. please. Yeah. Close those out, you know? But I think that's what people do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even when going to bed, they're just mm-hmm. cycling through their browser windows in their head and yep. not closing anything out.
Totally.
And for me, what's helped is writing stuff down, like mm-hmm. just put it down and say, I'll come back to this mm-hmm. at yeah. X time.
Yeah. And I would say too, that's one way that Adam has actually helped me. And then I'll ask you guys too, what are some more practical ways that you can help a spouse without actually taking on their emotion? But you know, when I'm having a particularly anxious day or I just can't seem to shake something, Adam has actually taken a clipboard and
probably that one right there,
this clipboard with a blank piece of paper and he'll hand it to me and say, babe, go in the room and make your list. And this is not a list of to-dos. This is a list of all the racing thoughts. And so what I do is I make a list of all the racing thoughts, like things I'm in control of, things I'm not in control of, everything, whether it's trivial or it's more, you know, more in depth. And then I'll just make a list, all the what ifs, right? Like some yeah. of the yeah. stuff that's totally unrealistic. What if this happens and what if that happens? And then he'll be like, okay, now go and highlight the things you can actually control,
which are actionable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And highest priority and actionable.
Yeah.
That's what you got to focus on. And that's mm-hmm. helped both yeah. of us at different times.
And yeah. so I think there's and it's a hard line to find, but that's kind of a tool to help find that line. How would you guys suggest any other practical tools or ways to define that line of helping and supporting a spouse, maybe who's anxious or depressed or grieving or having a hard time with something, how to help them without taking on their emotion and making sure that emotional boundary is in place?
Well, I know like for me, talking about things really helps me get it out. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of times if I'm talking to Evan about something, I will say in advance to him, mm-hmm. I don't need you to fix this or do anything about it.
It's
I
so just helpful. Need
to talk. Yeah. Yeah. Because he wants to fix it, of course, which is amazing. It's so sweet. But I'm like, I don't need you to fix this or do anything about it. I was like, I just need to talk this out so I can get out what of this is like realistic and what of this am I overanalyzing? And mm-hmm. I just need to kind of like flesh this out. Yeah. And so I just need you to listen to me. And as I talk, I will, you know, kind of get through that. And that really helps me get through my racing thoughts. And when I tell him that I don't need him to fix it or do anything in particular, I think it helps him be like, okay, I just need to listen. All right. Sounds good.
Yep.
Yeah. And I think too, it's important for the male to just remember that sometimes everything doesn't need to be fixed. Mm-hmm. It just needs to be heard. And there are times where, and she'll do this for me and hopefully I do it for her, where like you'll find that there's a repetition in a thought pattern or a repetition in something that keeps coming up. And so being able to recognize that so that you can help the person drill down on that is really important because my wife's helped me with that. And there's been times that I can think of where I've been able to help her as well, where there's this underlying thread of thought or this underlying thread of feeling. And so all these other issues are happening. But those are an umbrella for the source, which is back here somewhere. And so
what would be some examples of those patterns of thought, like the threads that you're talking about?
Oh, goodness. I always get the hard questions. I think so. We talk about anger being an umbrella, right? Uh-huh. It's like this umbrella emotion that it's just because someone's angry doesn't mean anger is the issue.
Yep.
And so if a spouse is lashing out at you or your kids or other people, it doesn't necessarily mean there is an anger problem, although that can be the case sometimes. But maybe there's something else that has triggered a response there. Mm-hmm. And how do we find that? How do we talk about it? We have a conversation about it. Maybe we start asking, more probing questions.
When did you start feeling this way? Like,
thank you for saving me.
That's kind of one thing that we do. Like, we'll say like, well, when did you start feeling this way? Or when did you notice that? Or what action specifically, made you start thinking along those lines? And then I feel like we ask each other, what's the overall goal here? Like, if this could be how you wanted it to be, if this could be any way you wanted it to be, like, what's the ultimate outcome?
Yeah.
And I feel like that helps him narrow it down.
Yeah.
And then another question that I ask is, what's something we can do right now? Like, what can we do right now to make this better? And I feel like that helps. And he reflects and does that to me. I feel like that's something
there's another question too. Like, I think this is the biggest thing that I've learned is to say, this is what I'm hearing you say.
Mm-hmm. Active listening. Yeah.
Because too, it could be that she's saying something and I'm thinking she's feeling such and such way about something. Uh-huh. But really when I repeat what I am perceiving, my perception back
your
to her.
Interpretation.
Yeah.
Yes. Interpretation matters. And there's a lot of times where arguments or different things take place because there's a lack of communication, but communication always breeds clarity. Yes. And so we have to have that communication open like that.
And that's a great point because with emotional boundaries, sometimes we're taking on other people's emotions that it's not actually their emotion. Right. So I feel like I do this all the time, but I'm like, I feel like you're angry about something. That's just how I'm seeing it. Is that right? Correct me if I'm wrong, and I just ask them to clarify, or I'm feeling, I feel like there's a little tension here clarifying that helps the understanding. And then you're not like, oh, they're angry. Well, what are they angry about? Then we start building up this whole thing about what they're angry about. We don't really know if that's really how the other person is feeling. That not just a spouse, just anybody in the workplace, people we're leading, our peers. That's applicable in all those scenarios.
So this happens a lot in marriages, especially around things that have happened. Like if something big has happened in someone's life, they typically, or there's one person that typically shuts down, right? They become quieter. And then depending on the situations, you have the spouse going, okay, where are you? What's going on? Mm-hmm. All I see is this frustration, this anger. Is that toward me? Is that toward the situation? Is that toward other people? Like, and that's very uncertain.
Yeah.
So through doing, these questions and actively listening, it's so helpful to help open up that spouse.
Mm-hmm, totally. How would you guys, just to kind of shift this a bit, how would you advise somebody who is on the opposite end of the spectrum where they're having trouble with empathy? I'll just give an example of a client this week that she's in law enforcement. And, you know, she said, I actually have chosen consciously to keep my emotions on, to keep my sensitivity on, because my colleagues have turned that off. Mm-hmm. And so her colleagues are kind of calloused, right, yeah, to the crime and the tragedy that occurs. And
because they feel if they open themselves up to that,
uh-huh,
then it would start marring them. So they put, mm-hmm, up that shield.
Yeah.
And say, that's not going to affect me because it takes, right, too much emotional impact on my
and
life.
And so maybe there are people listening where, you know, they're in some sort of first responder role, law enforcement, you know, emergency counseling, and they have taken that turned off mode into their marriage and they're not even able to empathize at all. How would you advise that person?
Well, I think that, there have been times where I know, just serving as a leader, that sometimes cutting off your emotion feels the easiest thing to do, mm-hmm, because it's just, there's so much going on sometimes. Mm-hmm. But a simple reminder to myself that, mm, that person or those people are really hurting,
yeah,
and reminding myself of that, it's almost like a snap back into reality. They're really hurting, mm-hmm, and I maybe can't relate to every emotion that they're feeling, or I can't maybe relate to that particular situation,
mm-hmm,
but they're really hurting. How can I best serve them?
Yeah.
And I feel like that mindset can open the door.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Just reminding yourself that they are really hurting, whether that's, yes, the people you serve or your spouse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, working in the hospital is so interesting. I worked there for like 8 years as a respiratory therapist. So being in emergent situations,
mm-hmm,
you can kind of get numb to it, and they call it compassion fatigue. And it's just like, you're just so, you have cared so much for so long that you're just like, I just can't care anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think the thing, there was an author that said, everyone makes sense up close, so lean in.
Mm.
And I think that's so important to do. I had a situation recently where we had a managerial shift before at this job, the last job I worked. And that shift was tough because the new person coming in was not like the old way, and it just was bad. And I remember telling our team, as frustrated as I was, everybody makes sense, but we have to take the time to learn about them, figure out, mm-hmm, about them. And I think one of the things with compassion fatigue is we tend to paint with a broad brush, mm-hmm, when we feel that way, when we, yeah, shut off our emotions. And so we need to kind of drill back down into a personal level of, mm-hmm, there's a reason they are the way they are.
So if it's like a marriage situation and, you know, one spouse is struggling with feeling, you know, maybe emotionally connected or feeling empathetic, they could even start with practicing some simple statements. You know, even, mm-hmm, if they're feeling cut off, they could say things like, I really care about how you're feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And they say that in a kind way,
yeah,
especially if a man says that to, mm-hmm, a woman. A woman's like, I'm glad you care about how I'm feeling, because blah, 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 you know,
but, right,
you know, practicing, uh-huh, saying things like that, or a simple, how are you feeling? Or what, mm-hmm, are you feeling? Or, mm-hmm, you know, tell me what's going on right now. And even just, I mean, if you know you're struggling with that, even it's just coming up with a simple list of things you can say in, yeah, those situations. And I'm one of those people that are like, you know, it can feel awkward the first couple of times, but, yeah, if you practice it, mm-hmm, you'll really start feeling that, and it'll come more natural to you.
Mm-hmm.
As you practice that, you'll be like, oh, this is a scenario where I need to, you know, ask my spouse, yeah, how are they feeling? Because some people grow, even more than just being first responders, some people grow up in families that are very, yeah, emotionally closed off.
Yeah.
And, yes, so they have to practice that, because it just doesn't come naturally to them. But when you practice that skill, the reward of becoming more emotionally connected, you'll find yourself, I think most of the time, wanting to do the same thing, because it creates, you know, more intimacy.
Can I share something too? One of the things that me and my wife, and I think it's okay that I share this, talking about our miscarriages. You know, we had a miscarriage and a child, and a miscarriage and a child. And as a man, there's no way that I can understand physiologically and emotionally what she is going through. The second one hit harder than the first, because we were much further along. We were about 13 weeks into that one. 18 weeks, I'm sorry. And the first one was quite a bit shorter. But the second one hit harder. But I think the thing is that it was very easy for me to not be empathetic, because we just can't understand as a man what is taking place there.
Yeah.
But what you have to do is sometimes practice the power of presence and just be there.
Yeah.
And it's such a powerful thing to be around and just to listen, because again, we were talking about men want to fix. You can't fix that.
Yeah.
You can pray and you can be close and you can come alongside. And I remember those moments. They were tough, but I think just being present for it is
so
sorry.
Good.
Am I making?
Yes, we're getting so upset over here. Sorry. No, I'm not upset. No, but
it's raw. Yeah.
But he, I think the step here was he said, I honestly don't know what to do in this situation, but I want to be here for you. If there's, tell me if there's something that I just want to be here with you. And that was so helpful to me, because he didn't come in and tried to fix it. He didn't sit. I was crying a lot. He didn't sit in the corner and cry, you know, but he's like, I'm here for you. I want to be here with you.
Yeah.
You know, if they tell me what I can do for you. And that was very helpful to me. Very
so helpful. Good.
So good.
Yeah.
It's powerful. Like, by you honoring your own limitations, Evan, you're able to help.
Wow. Yeah.
Just saying, like, look, you know, I'm not Jesus. I can't fix this.
And I'm not a woman. I can't
I'm
feel this.
I'm not a woman. I can't feel this.
Right.
Yeah.
But what I can do is be here. I know I can't make it happy tomorrow. Mm-hmm. But I'll be here for you and be, you know, help you with whatever you need.
Yeah.
And trusting her that she'll let you in on that too.
That's a big deal too. And she did. That's one of the things that she's always been very good at, is she's not emotionally closed off.
Yeah.
And her emotional openness, because men, I feel like men tend to be more emotionally closed in certain situations, but her emotional openness helped with mine. And she didn't build a wall there. She just kept that open communication and was telling me how she was feeling. Whether it was physical, I'm hurting today, or it's emotional, I'm having a rough day. You know, just not closing me off. That's so important in those bad times.
I think what Adam said is the key to helping people through some really difficult situations with not taking on their emotions is acknowledging your own limitations. That was so good, saying, you know, I'm not Jesus, but I want to be here for you, but I can't, you know, fix it. And I think that's like a boundary there. You know, they understand that you're limited, but then it's almost like a reminder to yourself to, I am not the savior, but I, you know, I will be with you. I will pray with you. I will walk with you. Yep. And, you know, we can pray together to the one who can take care of this.
So good.
I think this is so profound too. Something that keeps going through my mind that connects to this conversation is when we have a loved one or someone that's close to us that isn't healthy in some shape or fashion, that we can't do what they need to do for them. There is no way. And acknowledging, okay, this is the way it is. You know, this is reality. I can't change this or do this or fix this or make them do this.
Right.
All I can do, I could pray. I could be there for them when they need help in the right direction.
Right.
Yeah. Right. But what would you add to that? Like, for people going through a difficult situation or having maybe someone in their life that is difficult, mm-hmm. how would they set up emotional boundaries where they won't hurt themselves in the process of trying to help?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's really good because that's a common theme. I know adult children, sometimes with parents, they struggle with an overwhelming sense of guilt because it could be a scenario where the parent is trying to make unreasonable, maybe demands on their time. Mm-hmm. And they feel like they have to, maybe they're married and have children of their own. And the parent is, you know, constantly pulling on them. And then it turns into this, you're not a good son or you're not a good daughter. And I think that lovingly, you know, setting up those boundaries, you know, I love you so much and I want to be here for you. Unfortunately, you know, I have other responsibilities, or unfortunately, you know, I can do this for you. Maybe not even saying, unfortunately, you just say, I love you so much. I want to be here for you. I'm able to do this. Would you like me to do that for
it's
you?
Good.
And just leave it there. And then it doesn't take it down a negative path, but just saying what you can do, it sets a boundary without going into the negative road.
Like,
if you don't have to go there.
Right.
Or doing too much explaining or qualifying.
Yeah.
But just, you know, this is what I can do. I'd be glad to do that. It would be a great joy for me to be able to do that.
Yeah.
Cause I know this is common again. There's so many adult children that feel so much guilt when they can't do every family thing, every, you know, thing a parent or a grandparent or an aunt or an uncle asked them to do.
Right.
But it's just not.
That's so good. Just to break down what you did, people, because this is a great tool.
Yes.
It's called the sandwich method.
Yes.
You call out, hey, I would love, like, your intentions of how, like, you would love to do this thing for them.
Or your feelings toward them. Yes.
You say the positive, you give them that sweet bread and then the meat of the situation, which is like.
Or the tofu or black beans.
There you go. Where it's just like, I'm not able to.
Yes.
You know, in a very sweet, positive way.
Mm-hmm. Or then, here's what I can do.
And then you try to end it with a, I love you so much and I really hope, or whatever.
Yeah.
And you end it with that sweet bread again. And that's really, you could take that into so many situations.
Totally.
Yeah. That's so good.
One thing that has been helpful, and I wonder if you guys have other metaphors that you might use, but I think a typical metaphor that we hear is, you know, it's better to teach someone how to fish than to actually go get the fish for them, right?
Yeah.
And so I've used that metaphor with clients, but taking it a step further and having them decide, you know, when you're helping somebody, be it a parent or a friend or a ministry situation, when you're helping somebody, decide, is this a situation where I'm giving them a fish? Mm-hmm. Am I giving them the pole? Or am I telling them how to make a pole or how to go get the pole? Because that's a whole nother level. And sometimes you have to differentiate. Like, there's so many nuances with, you know, to what extent am I willing to help, or am I able to help, or is wise to help? Mm-hmm. And so differentiating even between just, you know, teaching them to fish versus how much of that teaching are you doing and in what fashion?
Yeah. That's good.
Yeah. Because biblically, you know, I was thinking while you guys were talking that there's a scripture in Matthew that talks about casting your pearls before the swine. Mm-hmm. And it's like you give the good and it's not received. So stop giving the good in certain situations because you put out so much of yourself that you end up in a deficit and the other person you're trying to help isn't even receiving. Mm-hmm. But then I thought too, when you asked that question, Jesus, when he called his disciples, he said, come follow me and I'm going to make you fishers of men.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He said, you're fishermen now, but I'm going to make you be something much more incredible. Mm-hmm. And what he did was he gave them all the tools. He demonstrated, he gave them the tools to do it. Mm-hmm. And then he sent them out to do it. Yeah. So there's a call to action there as well. Yes. And I think that's so important that we differentiate, like you were talking about, am I enabling or casting my pearls before the swine, or am I helping to teach and bring someone out of that situation that they're in.
Mm, So good.
Yeah, so good. And then we have to realize when helping hurts.
Mm-hmm. That's good. Yeah.
And that's so a book, true. By the way, that's a really good book on when giving too much and helping too much is actually putting the other person at a deficit. It's actually hurting them.
It's a book on missiology, actually, like the way to do missions work when helping hurts.
That's incredible.
What are some other book recommendations or resources that you guys would put out there for folks who find themselves in this situation where they're taking on other people's baggage and they're not maybe doing empathy the right way? What would you guys say for resources?
Okay, so our top two are, well, there's probably some other ones, but top two are definitely Soul Keeping by John Ortberg.
Okay.
Yes.
And then what's John the one Ortberg. By Gordon MacDonald?
Ordering Your Private World.
Ordering Your Private World.
Yeah. Mm.
Okay.
And what those two mainly are spiritual self-care. And you care for yourself before you care for others.
Gordon MacDonald talks about, and I just love this, he talks about his prayer life every day, and he talks about, you know, every day he gives his body and his mind and his emotions to Jesus Christ. Mm-hmm. And that is so centering. When you're doing that, I've tried to incorporate that into my daily, because when you're doing that, when you're, say, we're talking about emotional boundaries, when you're giving your emotions to God every day, mm-hmm. then your emotions are not bouncing all over the place. Mm-hmm. You know, they're centered. They're, you know, and we may have days where we feel, you know, a little more roller coaster-y.
Sure.
But we've got that centeredness in God. Mm-hmm. I'm giving my emotions to you today. Yeah.
It's part of a posture of surrender.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Really so good. We love those books. We recommend them all the time to people because I feel like it's so transforming, mm-hmm. you know, from the inside out. Yes.
Yeah, truly transforming.
They're very good books.
That's awesome. Okay. Well, we will link those books in the show notes. Any other resources that you guys would add to the list?
You know, if people talk about like emotions and stuff, I always like recommend like the 5 love languages quiz. Mm-hmm. And I know you guys probably have linked that in before, but I think that's a great one to keeping yourself full emotionally. You got to know how you give and receive love. Because I feel like that's a good stabilizer. You can keep yourself full so you're not vulnerable to taking on others' emotions.
It's good.
Yeah. Yep. Anything else, babe?
I think one that's really good is Didn't See It Coming by Karen Newhoff. Yeah, and it's pretty much about burnout and how to see those.
Heard
those
of that one.
Yeah, it's good. It's about, I mean, the whole first chapter is what we just talked about.
Okay.
And then how to recover from people that take advantage of your goodness. Ooh. And so it's really good.
Yeah. Wow.
That's good.
Ooh,
well,
okay.
You heard it, people. We'll have these linked in the show notes. So if you want to pick up one of these books, click on that and take you there.
So tell people how they can get in touch with you guys, find out more about your podcast, give them all the information for where to go.
Yeah.
Okay. So if you are looking for the Think on These Things podcast, you can find us on Instagram at Think on These Things podcast.
Okay.
You can go to Instagram at Biblos Network, or you can find us on YouTube at the Biblos Network, and we're sprinkled in there with all the wonderful goodness of the Biblos Network that is there.
Okay.
Or our Instagram.
And then you can also, this is kind of fun, we actually set up a texting service where you can text and ask questions or get in touch there. And you can text the word THINK to 910-600-0498.
Okay.
And that'll get you looped in with everything going on with Think on These Things.
Awesome. So cool. That's really neat. Okay. I didn't know you guys had the texting service. That's awesome.
Yep.
Yes. Okay. So we'll put all that in the show notes, folks, so you can connect with them, go follow their podcast and subscribe, follow them on Instagram, all the things. And I'm sure we'll be having them on again because now they're on our team. All right, guys, we're going to close out the podcast the way we close out all of our podcasts, and that's by asking you guys to rewind back to the first couple years of your marriage. You've been married 8 years?
Yep.
8 years. Yes, 8 years. So rewind back and think about the advice you wish you would have received and fill in the blank, dear young married couple.
You go first. I'll go second.
What are you going
to say? I don't know yet. That's why I'm getting confused. Yeah.
Okay. Dear young married couple, this is especially to me. I'll feel convicted when I think back on this. Don't take yourself so seriously. Mm. Learn to laugh at yourself from the very beginning, and your first few years of married life will be so much more enjoyable.
Yes. Aww, love that. Yes. That's good.
Dear young married couple, don't envy what other people have. Mm. Enjoy what you have and enjoy the ride. Don't go too fast. Take your time because it's fun.
Yes, it's so much fun.
It is fun.
Guys, this was serious. This is a great conversation. And
thank you guys for having us.
Oh my God. For sure. We enjoyed it.
We'll have you guys back hopefully soon.
Oh, yeah, for sure. All right, guys. Thank you.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.